Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Be nice to yourself. Lee Liston. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Storybox podcast. My name is Jay Phantom, and if you are listening for the first time or you are a returning listener, I just want to say welcome. This week on the show, we have another special guest. His name is Lee Liston. Now, Lee is an actor, is also a bodybuilder or was a bodybuilder, and we're going to be talking a lot about finding your purpose in life. Now, as an actor, Lee has had a lot of success. As you would call, he's been in four of Devon Supertramp's videos. If you don't know who that is, you can look him up on YouTube. He's quite famous. And we also get to talking about Lee being in a Gymshark commercial or video that went viral on YouTube. We also get to talking about how Lee went on a mission trip and how he found his purpose in that mission trip. And we get to talking a lot about the meaning of what life is and how you're able to sort of transition yourself out of certain aspects of life and find your purpose-driven life. Pretty much. So it's a great talk. I know you guys are going to get a lot out of what he has to say. So without me continuing on, let's dive into the story box and hear Lee's story.
Hey, yeah, got him back. Okay, so pretty much.
Sorry about that.
No, it's not your fault, man. It's all good. It's part of being the internet and being a world away. So I think it might be best to start again, if that's okay.
That's fine.
Yeah.
That's fine.
So the question was pretty much, so what does success look like to you to start off with and the definition of success?
So basically for me is success used to look like this big explosive thing, almost like you're setting off a firework, you know, you light the firework, you're waiting for it to explode and you know it's going to happen and it explodes. And then people look at it one of two ways. It's either it explodes and there's a big firework show, or sometimes you light a firework and it's like a dud, right? And it's annoying and you're like, wait, I thought this was supposed to be the big thing. And then what I realized is, you know, success is kind of a day by day thing. It's something where you're adding a little to it each and every day. And then at the end of your life, you look back on that, you know, what you've added to it. You look at that success and go, this is what I made of my life, because life is long, you know, and success isn't definite, you know, and failure isn't final, you know?
No, 100%. I totally agree with what you just said, especially with the failure part. And I think people can often get this idea of success in their mind. Like the firework thing you were describing, like everyone sort of sees the stars and sees, you know, if you're an actor, especially, like you want to have your big break, and that for you might be, oh, I've kind of made it, like, you know, I've reached the pinnacle of success in a way. So where do you think that idea of success comes from? Is that from yourself, or is that from people around you, media? Where do you think it comes from?
Well, are you talking about my idea of success now or my idea of success before?
Your idea of success before, and how has that changed to now? What sparked the change?
Well, you know, you watch like Jimmy Fallon or these like talk show hosts, you know, and you watch these celebrities and you almost look at them like they were born to do it. Like, and it's like two sides of the equation. Like, I'm the mediocre version. I'm the Walmart version. I'm the, you know, of their success, and they're just meant for greatness. And one of the things of that changed my perspective a lot was, I mean, it sounds really simple, but I made a spreadsheet and I put like all my submissions that I've been doing, my resume, like I put everything I could think of. And every time I think of something, I put that on my spreadsheet resume that I put on to a real resume. That's kind of like what I actually give to, like, you know, producers or casting directors or, you know, people that I'm sending emails to, you know, et cetera. And you know what I realized? It hit me like a ton of bricks. Look, Dwayne Johnson, for instance, has a huge resume, you know, WWE, and then he transitioned into acting and it exploded there and done so many things. But he has a resume just like the rest of us, and all of us can grow our resume. And the funny thing is he has something on his resume that's like the first thing that's on his resume. We all have the first thing that's on our resume, and it's not great, but it's there, and we all have something to build upon, you know.
100%.
And that's why I stopped looking at celebrities in the way that I did, because I was like, yeah, they had the break, but they still have to keep working. You know, you don't stop working once you've made it. You actually have to work harder in a lot of ways, you know.
No, that's just it. You know, like, no one will ever truly make it. Like, what is the actual definition of making it, so to speak? Like, there's always something more, something next that is going to come into our life, you know, something that we need to actually strive for. I mean, sometimes you get to a point in your life that I've spoken to people, you know, they've sort of reached a level in their life where they're not satisfied, so they want to do something else. And that sort of helps transition their definition of success into being something else. So it's very interesting to hear you say all that, man. Like, really appreciate you saying it. So let's go into your career and pretty much your life. So, like, I'll get you to introduce yourself, what you do for a living, and what has your journey been like to start off with?
Well, all right. So my name is Lee Liston. I'm 27 years old. I live in Provo, Utah. My career in acting began about 5 years ago. So I served an LDS mission in the Philippines. So I'm a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Yep.
So when I was 19, I waited a little bit. I didn't go right away. I was a little hesitant, but I decided to serve my mission and go into it. And some of the ways I feel like I did it for some of the wrong reasons, because I was doing it because everybody else was doing it. Mm. But ultimately, I'm glad I did it because I grew a lot. Not in height, but like I grew.
That's funny.
Thanks. But I did grow as an individual, and I grew a lot. And one of those things on my mission while I was there, you do these things called role plays where you interact. So you'll be teaching someone, and you have these weekly like district meetings that you go to, where you have a district leader and you practice teaching and things, and they'll kind of give you like a principle of teaching or something that you're not thinking about and using. And then we'll do these things called role plays using that for someone that you're teaching. Maybe you're teaching an investigator that has an issue with the word of wisdom. Now, when I say word of wisdom, you know, like, as just members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, we don't, you know, drink alcohol, we don't drink tea, we don't drink, you know, those kind of things. We don't partake of those things. And so it's like, maybe that's a concern, or maybe they're not, you know, they're concerned about tithing. And so which is, you know, paying 10% of all we make to help build the kingdom of God here on the earth today. Hmm. So my point being is, sometimes you teach people a principle like that and they'd have a concern like, hey, I don't have enough money to do that or this or that. You know, you'd have a conversation about it. So we would have these role plays where we'd, you know, be teaching the investigator and getting into it. And, you know, one pair of missionaries would actually be teaching, and one pair of missionaries would be the investigator, you know, pretending to be them. So I kind of stepped into that and enjoyed it a lot, and I would get really into it. And sometimes they'd be like, whoa, that was just like we were teaching them for real. And I was like, whoa, that was crazy. You know, and then people started asking me, have you ever thought about being an actor? And I was like, yeah, well, I did plays when I was like in junior high school and things like that. But like, I've never thought about it as a career focus. And so what happened was, I got home from my mission. I met a guy named Elder Bergen. So he was near the end of his mission. He's from Knoxville, Tennessee. He got called to serve in my home ward, which was in West Valley, Utah, when I lived there. And we met and we got introduced. And he is an aspiring director. So he had worked on projects and done things. And I didn't know his resume at the time, you know. But he looked at me and he said, hey, Lee, have you ever considered being an actor? And I was like, whoa, you're like, you know, I mean, I mean, everybody's telling me that all of a sudden, but maybe, you know. And so I was going to go to UVU, and before my mission, I had gone to a place called the Haunted Forest, and I was walking through the Haunted Forest and with my friends in high school, and this guy approached me, this creepy guy, because he was like this creepy like walkthrough. He comes up to me, keeps following me, and I'm like, okay, now it's just getting weird. It's like not interesting anymore. And he comes up to me, and he gets down because he's on these stilts, and he gets down. And he's like, hey, I don't want to offend you, but over at Utah Valley University, we're looking for a mini mascot. And if you come, we'll pay your tuition. We'll pay your room and board. Like, you'll be good to go. And I was like, whoa, you know, and that was crazy. It was serendipitous. And so kind of flash forward to, you know, leaving right before I left on my mission. One of the ladies that was like the manager of the thing said, actually, you know what? If you go on your mission, I don't know if we're going to be able to give you the same scholarship when you get back. And I was like, you know what? I don't know, but I need to go on my mission. So I'm going to do it, you know, cause I have faith in it. So I go and serve my mission, and then we come back to where we were with Elder Bergen. And I said, yeah. And so he said, I moved to Provo to go to UVU. To see what the mascot thing is and just to be out here because I wanted to grow. I didn't want to live at home anymore. And he's like, go out and network, meet people. And so I started networking and telling people, going to little shindigs here and there, saying I was an actor, even though I had zero on my resume, right? Like I had zero things on my resume telling people I was an actor. And the very first thing I got was I was at a dessert party. It was like on a Sunday. This guy owned a dentist office, like Forever Young Dentistry or something like that. And he owned it, and he invited me to a dessert party. So I went to the dessert party, started telling people, and this guy named Ben Chang said, hey, my friend RJ Eidos is shooting a YouTube video, and it's like a cover video of Shake It Off. It was when Shake It Off was exploding at the time, you know, with Taylor Swift. And she kind of came into the pop, you know, full embraced her pop side of what she wanted to do with her career. So we did a cover. We recorded like a parody cover, and I played like one of the seven dwarves. And, like, Disney, yeah. No, it's a cool thing and super random. And then I started networking, and I met all these big YouTubers. And then I built all this YouTube, like working with all these like Devin Supertramp, Stuart Edge, like working with all these people that were pretty big on the YouTube platform, but ultimately. You remember Barrett Bergen, who I talked about as my friend, is more like he's like a Christopher Nolan, you know, kind of guy. We're very serious. So it's like I kind of got distracted a little bit. And not to say it wasn't valuable to be in those YouTube things and have that on my resume. Ultimately, what I've wanted over time is I've done a bunch of things. I've done short films. I've done a bunch of YouTube videos. I've done commercials. I've done, you know, everything it is to be where I am now. I even did a reality show on TLC called My Little Life. You know, so I've been, you know, kind of all over the place in media, but now my main focus is to get in feature films, short films, build my demo reel, build my resume, and show that I'm an actor, not just somebody who looks like a cool little person that can be in films, but somebody that's a good actor, you know, so that's kind of my story.
That's good, man. Like, good start to it. Very interesting. I've got a lot of questions coming out of what you just said. So the first one is going back to sort of your school experience and things like that. Now, you did say that you are a little person, if you don't mind me saying that. So what was it
like?
I'm sorry. I'm very cautious, you know, like with offending people about their heights and everything like that. But, you know, I'm curious to know, like, did that affect you in any way? Like, being in school, were you... Did people like bully you at all, or what was your school experience like? Was it a positive one, or negative?
Because you look at my dwarfism, you're like, oh, I bet he was bullied. But honestly, with you, like to be honest with you, when I was in elementary school, I just had this charismatic personality I was gifted with. And I made friends. I had so many friends and it was almost like magnetic. I was really, really, really popular in school. I had lots of friends. I was like in my ninth grade year. So I was still in junior high. I was student body president. If that, you know,
Oh, well done.
Yeah, no, it was cool. It was cool.
That's but mad.
It was fun. It was fun. I was student body president in junior high, and like I did lots of cool things. Like, and I remember this one time, this one kid, only one that I can remember. This kid was like, "Oh my gosh, it's a midget!" And just for context, midget's pretty derogatory to little people generally, you know. And it was like, "Oh my gosh, look at that midget!" And I remember this Polynesian guy grabs the kid and shoves him up against the locker. He's like, "If you ever say anything like that again, I will like kill you." Or like,
well done.
You know, but like, I just had a lot of support. So it's like the biggest amount of bullying I got, you know, if you want to call it bullying, was mostly from younger kids, like little kids, you know, because I go to Walmart or a public place or a restaurant and I'm walking around and like, mom, look at him. Look, you know, and it's like being a celebrity, even when you don't want to be. It's like, you know, because you're like, I just want to eat in peace, you know, because I walk in a room and people notice, right, whether for good or for bad. And so, yeah, no, it's that's kind of where the extent of bullying has come from, if you want to call it that, you know.
Well, they say that no publicity is bad publicity. So regardless, you know, I think I think today the world's come a long way in terms of bullying and in another sense as well, probably hasn't in Australia. I don't know what it's like in America, but it seems to be that, you know, diversity and things like that is starting to shift the right way. There's like a lot of promotion about those things. So it's good that you had a positive experience, man. You seem like the kind of person that does have that magnetism about them. Like, if I was to meet you, man, I'd love to just go up to you and start talking to you, like we're doing now, you know, like just getting to know each other, like getting to know your story. So your acting career, can you say that it started sort of in school? Like, that's when you sort of had the passion and the drive to want to go and be an actor, or did you want to do something else?
Honestly, I've always felt like I was some kind of surfer boy when I was younger. And when I mean not this like actually surfing, but just that, like, have you ever seen Finding Nemo? That
yes.
Pixar Disney movie? So do you remember when they go into that current and they bump into those turtles?
Yep.
You know, and the turtles are just like, "We're just going with the flow," you know. It's yep. like, and you know, and you have the dad. I can't remember the dad's name, but you know, he's just
Crush.
Like, "I gotta find my son." Yeah,
yeah.
Crush.
Yeah.
And so anyway, the dad's like, "We gotta go." And he's like, "Just be cool, man. You know, just like, we're going with it." You know, and the only thing is that's kind of me. I've never. This sounds really bad, but I've never taken things as serious as I should. Like, I always liked being the center of attention. So I think that is why I liked acting and that I have that kind of personality that likes that. But I it wasn't until, like I said, after my mission that I was like, oh, I could do this for real. Because I was only doing plays and stuff in school because that's what my friends were doing. I was like, okay, I'll come do the play with you. But, you know, it wasn't to any, like, this is what I want to do. Like, it wasn't to that extent. That's just kind of me, I guess.
So there was nothing that you actually want or you thought about doing in school besides acting?
Well, what I mainly wanted to do, so when I was younger, I kind of jumped between careers. So when I was in elementary school, I wanted to be an astronaut because I wanted to be the first little person astronaut. I had never seen it and I wanted to do it, and every little kid wants to be an astronaut. And then on top of that, I was like, oh, I'll be the first little person astronaut. I was pretty ambitious about that as a kid, you know, like I was just eager wanting to change the world and that's how I could impact it. And then as I got older, I kind of moved into more I had a season when I wanted to be a veterinarian because I loved animals. But I feel like if I was around anybody that had a career and they were good at talking about it, for instance, it would be like if you being, you know, an interviewer on this podcast, if he was like, "Yeah, this is my job and this is what I do," I'd be like, "Oh, that looks fun. I want to try that." You know, because I love to try things and to do that. And so, and then I wanted to be a lawyer, for a while. I thought about being a lawyer. Yeah, just be in a courtroom and be like, yeah, Perry Mason, if you know who Perry Mason is. I wanted to do that, and it just, I've always been interested in a lot of things. So thought about being a lawyer. I worked at a bank called Wells Fargo. I don't know if they have Wells Fargo in Australia, but
no.
It's a mega bank, if you will. It's kind of a big bank. And I worked there for like 5 years, and I was like, I worked there as a means to an end, though, like, because I would work there and then I'd get acting jobs, you know, and like commercials, like outside on my days off.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, and then I thought, okay, my career is going to be Wells Fargo maybe, and I'm going to stop acting eventually. But I was like, nope, still not it. Got it. Acting is always just found its way back. You know, it's kind of like you like threw it somewhere, you threw it in a trash can, and then it's sitting on your bed when you walk in your room. And then you throw it out the window, and then you walk in the bathroom, and then it's sitting on the mirror. You know, acting didn't really leave. And so that's kind of, and especially film acting, you know, so if that makes sense to what I'm saying.
Oh, totally, man. It's amazing how what you're meant to be doing, despite the fact that you might, like you said, try and throw it away and go do something else. It's amazing how it almost comes like full circle, comes right back to you. And you're thinking, okay, I'm going to try to do something else now. Because it's happened to me many times. Like, I'm a filmmaker, right? So it's ever since I was 8, that's the point where I can remember that I wanted to make movies and I wanted to tell stories more, but then use the power of film as the medium to share stories that would, you know, challenge people. And, you know, I sort of like started, because in Australia, like you got to get a job, get money, that sort of thing. Like it's not as big as in what it is in America. It's very, very hard. It's a very hard industry to break into. So, you know, you have those people that tell you sort of like, why don't you go get a job and then work on it on the side and do your best at that, and then go back to filming when you've got yourself set up and you got some capital behind you. And I just thought, you know, I want to go directly to filming. I'm going to go to film school and I'm going to do this. This is going to be my actual job for the rest of my life. But the interesting thing, man, it didn't actually work out like that. So I totally understand what you mean. So I'm curious to know as well, like the mission side of things, where did that come from and how did that start?
So as far as like, why did I serve the mission or what?
Yeah. So like, why did you want to actually go and do it? Was it like you sort of going with the flow again, or did you like have a conviction to actually go yourself?
A little bit of both. So growing up, I haven't told this story in a long time, but when I was about 19, I was hanging out with friends all the time. I had three friends, my friend Kayla, Paxson, and Kevin. We just hung out every day. Like, we'd wake up, hey, what are we doing today? I don't know, let's do this. And we did that, and I kind of became just the endless summer, right? Of like not, and then it's winter, but you're still hanging out like it's summer. So,
good way to put it.
Yeah, and so I would hang out with my friends a lot, and I was living with my parents, and I was working at Wells Fargo as a teller. You know, I had a pretty chill. I had a good amount of money in my account. Like, I wasn't, like, being crazy, but I wasn't doing anything with my life at that point, you know? I was just existing. And which, you know, we all go through that phase, you know, to in some extent. And so my dad invited me into his room one time, and he said, Lee, I need to talk to you. And I said, oh, here we go. You know, like,
love it.
Yeah, because, you know, you get kind of nervous when your parent says that, especially if you live in the house. And you're like, oh, I wonder if he knows. Like, do I know what?
Knows a secret that I don't even know about.
right. And so he brought me in and he said, Lee, you have three options. And I was like, okay, you either move out, pay rent. Move out and go to college, stay here and just pay rent, or go on a mission. And I was like, whoa, you know, because, I mean, you know, you would think that it was like a wake-up call. Because I was like, oh, my goodness, I'm not doing anything with my life. You know, like, I'm just existing. I'm crush right now, right? Like, I'm just existing in this space of this time, you know, not to get too philosophical, but anyway, like, but it got so there. And so finally, I was like, you know what? I don't want to just sit and exist and pay rent, because that just means I'm doing the same thing that I'm doing now, but paying money to do what I'm doing now. And I don't want to do that. And, you know, or I could, you know, go to college, but I'm like, well, I don't know. I'm not ready to go to college. And I was, but then I was like, you know what though? I do want to go to mission. This time is going to pass where I can't, you know, serve a mission, you know, where I'm going to regret it if I don't. And I know it's like, I didn't have a super dying conviction at the time, but I knew it's what I needed to do. And so I said, all right, Dad, I'm going to go on a mission. He said, okay, let's do it. And so I went through and, you know, did my mission papers, which there's a process, you know, and then you get your mission call, which is kind of a phenomenal experience. I don't know how to explain it, but you know, you get something in the mail and it's your mission call. Right. I did. But it's a letter, so I don't know how it's a call, but it is.
You get a call to read the letter.
Right. But they still don't call you. You just get the letter, so it still doesn't work. But anyway, so you get the letter and you open it up, and you know, you're with the family and everybody's like anticipating it. It's kind of like a fun little event, you know, and because you don't know where you're going until you read this. And so I remember getting it, inviting a couple friends over and ripping it open and going, you know, Elder, listen, you have been hereby called to serve in the Baguio Philippines mission, and you will be speaking the language of Tagalog. And I was like, Tagalog? I don't know what that is. You know, I was like, that's crazy. I didn't even know that was a language. And then, you know, Tagalog obviously is the way. I remember when I was in working at Wells Fargo, I was in the town, like, I would say these, like, Tagalog. Like, I would, like, memorize how to say it so I didn't sound like an when I was talking about it. And so I got my call, and I was really excited, and I was really nervous, and getting, you know, I went on my mission. And you spend about, I spent 9 weeks in the MTC. You go into the Missionary Training Center, and, you know, you learn how to teach. You learn how to, you learn the foundation of the language. You know, you don't, like, go out speaking it fluent, but you learn the foundation of the language. And then you go out and you get your trainer who trains you how to, you know, be a missionary in the field. And then that was overwhelming for me, because I was like, oh my gosh, I didn't have a work ethic. Remember, I was crushed. Like, I was like, imagine throwing crush into like a hard, intense work environment, you know? And so I was like, you know, I was like, this is overwhelming. I remember, like, I was like, I don't like this. I don't like this at all. And, you know, I was like, I hate this. It was hard, and Filipinos made fun of me a lot. Like, you know, nothing wrong with Filipinos. It just, they don't have the same kind of political correctness you and I do, which it just is true, because it's just like, oh, where's Michael? Oh yeah, the fat guy. I don't know where he is. Like, if it's a physical feature, it's not offensive to like describe it.
Yeah.
In that way. And so anyway, it's just different culture, which is fine. I got used to it, but. Overall, and then a year later, so you go through different companions. You only have them, like, you can have them up to, like, you know, a certain amount of time. And then when the mission president feels inspired, like, he'll give you a new companion, or your training is only 12 weeks, and then you get a follow-up trainer, or you train, or you just get a regular companion. There's lots of different ways your mission can go. And I remember, I moved on from my trainer, and I went through all this growth. And a year later, he became what's called a zone leader, which is over a group of missionaries. So you have missionaries, you have district leaders, and then you have zone leaders. It's not like a tier. It's just what they're responsible for. And so my trainer, my first companion in the MTC, the one I spent the time with, because you always have a companion, he became the zone leader, which I was like, you know, cool. And then my trainer became his companion. So my first companion, we didn't get along at first either. And then we became best buddies. And then, like... And then same with my trainer, I went through all that, like, hardship of, you know, getting used to the mission. And then suddenly I am, and it's a year later, and I had gotten really good at the language. I had been through a lot. I had been seasoned. And I'll never forget him and I went out teaching, because we went on what's called exchanges, where a missionary, like a district leader, will go on exchanges with the zone leader to see how their area is, you know, that they've, you know, that they have responsibility over, and they, you know, either go teach, just do a regular day. They're just checking on the area. So we went out and taught, and holy crap, we were like a dynamic duo. Like that. Like, and it got me emotional because I was like, this is so cool. Like, I had learned gotten really good at the language. Like, he was like, whoa, you know. So it was just like, you know, and it was really cool. And so yeah, it was such an adventure, and so much growth happened, you know, during that experience.
And how long were you there for?
2 years.
2 years. Did you ever come back home, or were you just in the Philippines for 2 years?
No, I stayed there the whole time. So
wow.
Yeah, no, it's a commitment for sure. It's different. People are like, whoa, but yeah.
That's a major change, man. Like, absolutely incredible. Like, going from your home life to then something that's literally way out of your comfort zone to another country, learning another language, learning another culture, and then having to teach them. Like, that's pretty remarkable how you were able to do that, man. Like, wow. So, did you think when your dad gave you those three options, did you think that the mission would be the easiest option?
You know what? In some ways, yes, I did. And I think that's why it was so hard. Because it's like a slap in the face. Like, I'm going to humble you up right up, you know, just because Heavenly Father was like, I am going to humble you up. And I'm gonna think, you know, because, yeah, no, I definitely see how you'd like, I don't know, no big deal. You know? But yes. Sorry.
Did you sort of make that decision straight away, or how long did it take you to make the decision?
To go on a mission?
Yes.
It was like a couple hours. Like, I like walked away from that conversation. Like, yep, going on a mission. Like, I want to say like it was like 3 months later, but no, it was a couple hours. I was like, yep, Dad, I'm gonna go on a mission. Cool. Glad we got that figured out, because it was like, once, like I said, it was a wake up call, right? Like, it was like, I need to move forward with my life.
Mm. Mm. That's all good, man. Like, fantastic. And what was the number one thing that you learned from that experience?
I think how important the gospel of Jesus Christ is.
That's a good
in people's lives. Like, I think we all get so busy, right? Like, you and I are talking about careers and what we want to do with our life, and then the gospel of Jesus Christ puts it all into perspective. Like, I can be Dwayne the Rock Johnson tomorrow, but that won't matter if I'm not living, you know, to these things that I know that are true. Because if this is true, you know, I want to return. I don't know how much you know about the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, but the goal is to, you know, live righteously, live the commandments, repent, and ultimately return to live with our Father in heaven. And in that sense, it puts things because it says in Doctrine and Covenants, in Moses 139, it's his work in his glory to bring to pass eternal life and immortality of man. And, you know, My point being is that is his vision. And so all we're doing here is prepping, and everything surrounds it. And you can watch films, and everything has elements of that in it. That's where you feel good when you watch it. Like, you feel, because everything has elements of the gospel of Jesus Christ in it. And so I think it was just, I've forgotten sometimes. If you've seen The Lion King, I watched a scene with my friend, because I'm not perfect and I've made mistakes, and I've done it, and I've strayed, even though I know these things. I've made mistakes, and I remember I was watching that scene from Lion King with my friend the other day, Simba is a little bit older, and he's kind of lost, and, you know, and he bumps into Rafiki, and he's like, "I know your father," you know, and he brings him through all those, like,
And Rafiki gives him a smash on the head. Like, yeah, correct. Wake up.
Yeah, and he's like, "It was in the past." You know, it's like, "But that hurt. It's in the past." And he moves him towards it, and he shows him to remind him who he is, to be, you know, he was destined to be the king of the Pride Lands. And now I'm not saying everybody that is in this capacity is destined for that, but it's like, it's not underestimating how great you are and how great understanding what God has in store for you.
Yeah,
you know, and that's what we're here to say. It's not like, hey, I'm going to fix you and make you a cookie cutter way. It's like, no, I want to show you the way to become happy, fulfilled. Because look, ideally, like, I can be a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. I can be the best actor I could possibly be. But and I can have the best of both worlds. It's just a matter of, because I used to see it separately, and because when I see it separately, because people in the film industry, as you probably well know, yep, don't have a high standard of living. You know, they're partying, they're drinking, they're hanging out with friends nonstop, they're doing things, and, you know, not being judgmental, but it's just, that's just the lifestyle that's adapted. So it can be very hard to be a member of the church and then also live in, you know, in that environment, you know, because you have to know and decide, you know, before you get involved in those, you know, in that industry, in this industry, you want to say that what it's going to take, you know?
And I feel the same way about that, man. Like, I'm a born again Christian myself.
Yeah.
Grew up in a family that, you know, went to church. But if you don't find, the Bible talks about finding your own salvation and then working on yourself, like working on your own salvation and working on your own principles, values based on the Bible. And like what you said, in terms of what's the point of just going through life if you're not going to actually share the truth, the word. And the Bible says, like, very clearly, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes but to the Father but through me. So, like, through Jesus Christ. That's what I mean. Like, our mission as people, as Christians, is to spread the word of Jesus Christ and to help people, not to like smash it in their face and say, look, this is it, like, this is the truth and you need to repent, you need to do this, but to lovingly, and I think that's where a lot of people think that Christians aren't going to love them properly. It's just like, I'm going to blatantly put this out there for you and you need to listen, you need to take it. But it's literally like, this is why you need to accept Jesus as your savior, you know, like these are the reasons for it. You know, so you can live with Christ forever. You know, it's not, and talking about the film industry as well, like, for me, I know that because my uncle's in the film industry, he's a special makeup effects artist. So he's worked on many, many Hollywood blockbusters, Wolverine, Babe, Charlotte's Web, Matrix, the whole thing, man. Like, he's heavily into it. So if you were to ask him a question about what the film industry is like, he will tell you. He knows. But that, he's not a Christian, unfortunately, but he will tell me this is the life of a person in the film industry. And is that something that you want to be part of? And then I'm saying, well, I want to be part of it, but I don't have to follow along with it, if that makes sense. Like, I can be, like, it's a principle of the Bible. He's like, you can be in the world, but not of the world. You know, like, you don't have to follow those trends, even though it is very, very difficult not to actually follow them. Like, you can get very caught up in, like, if you make friends in there, you know, it's very, very tempting. I don't know if you've ever found that, man, for yourself.
Tempting in what capacity? Tempted by, like, what, like, exactly?
Like, tempted to go out and, you know, party and to drink and to do all those sorts of things that the film industry sort of promotes, like the party lifestyle, like party hard, so to speak.
Yeah, that's kind of what we talk about, rediscovery, and that's kind of like the dark side of being the crushed personality. Is you kind of, you're like, oh yeah, I'm gonna try this because I want to experience it, like, I've never experienced it. And, you know, and so I don't want to get too into detail, but I have given into those temptations at times, and I, you know, because I'm so around it, it's everywhere. And the problem is with people sometimes, is especially as, you know, believers of the gospel of Jesus Christ, we sometimes underestimate how powerful the adversary is and how powerful those temptations are, right? 100%. Like, because you always tell yourself, like, oh, you know, like, I would never do that, or I will never do that. And then suddenly you're at this party, you're doing it, and then you do. And you're like, whoa. Like, and still even then, though, that's where if you lose faith, because the adversary wants to be like, you're done, you messed up, you can't go back. And that is the point of the atonement of Jesus Christ. That is the point of repentance, right? Yeah. Like that is the saving grace. That is being able to go through the steps and return to Him. It's not this perfect, like, if you having a perfect track record. It's about accepting that you're imperfect and letting someone who is perfect, like the Savior, you know, guide you towards, you know, guide you back to Heavenly Father. So it's like that's and taking full advantage of the atonement that He, you know, He but died for our sins. You know, and so it's already been done. Like, you make mistakes, and it's a weird concept to think something in the future that you will do in the future has already been paid for. That's nuts. That'd be like going to like McDonald's or whatever and going, hey, I'd like to get this food, and like, oh yeah, and this and this and this. Yeah, it's already been paid for. What do you mean it's already been paid for? Someone paid for it. And you're like, really? And so that's kind of that's how it is. And I'm not saying you seek sin out, you know, to do that, right? Like, you're not going to go seek sin out just like, I want to see if this works. Like, you're not going to go, hey, this is paid for, right? That's not, you know, like, you're not going to look at it that way. But you look at it in the way that if you do mess up, it is there as long as you are a repentant mind. Like, you're not mocking the atonement, and you're not mocking the plan of salvation, right? You know, so that's kind of, you know, just kind of getting deep into that.
That's good, man. Like, I like how you said the example of McDonald's. That was funny. Everyone loves food. So if you relate it back to food, people are going to resonate with it very well. That's well done.
Thank you.
So I want to move forward a little bit towards some of the projects that you've been a part of. And now, I remember seeing you on one of Devin's Supertram's videos and wondering, who is this guy? Like, he's amazing. Like, he's absolutely incredible, you know? But he made me keep watching the movie. Like, I love Devin Supertram's work, and I love how he just brings on so many different people, like, different calibers, and telling a story, like, the way that he tells a story. He's just so much energy as well, man. Like, he just looks like he's just, like, a bundle of pure energizer. Like, he just keeps going. So how did you actually get that project with him?
So what happened was so remember when I told you about RJ Eidos and those YouTube projects, like that Disney Shake It Off video?
Yep.
So what happened was I worked with RJ on a few more projects. Then one time I was walking around to the Sundance Film Festival. Excuse me. And I was walking through the Sundance Film Festival, and I actually have film. If you watch my video, Little Guy Learns, it's my YouTube channel that I made where I learned things on the fly, and Devin taught me how to glide cam on the fly like I'd never done it. The reason I tell you that is that in the beginning of the video, I show how Devin met. And I was walking around kind of vlogging it a little bit. Like, I had my phone with this little, like, phone holder thing, and I was holding it out and just kind of interviewing people on the fly, like, just kind of having fun. And Devin was one of the people I knew of him, and we apparently knew of each other. And I was walking, and I just got the impression to film candidly, and I walk out of this novelty shop with some friends, and it was, like, pretty late. And I go, Devin? And he goes, Lee? And then I was like, you know, and I film him, and he's like, dude, what's up, man? I've always wanted to work with you. He's like, I've always wanted to work with you. And so we kind of got hyper and became friends. And he, and then at that point, we started working together on a couple things. Like, we worked on the Mario Kart video, obviously, the both videos we filmed there. And then we did that Bullies versus Underdog video, which was a lot of fun. I don't know if you've seen that. And then we've just kind of remained friends ever since. So it was a serendipitous moment, right place, right time. And it was just, and then that spawned this beautiful friendship. So yeah.
That's great, man. And how many projects in total have you actually done with him?
I've done three.
And are you gonna be doing any more?
Possibly. It really just depends. I'm kind of more towards I'm more towards like, because he's more YouTube oriented,
yeah,
and I'm more film and TV oriented,
yeah.
And so I want to be on feature films. I want to build my film career and just that. So if he texted me and called me and said, "Hey, I have this video, and if it was the right video and I had the schedule, I'd be like, hey, Cal, let's do it," you know?
Yeah, good, man. And so going into like sort of the feature film and TV world, how has that been going for you at the moment?
Well, at the moment, it's popping. I don't know if the way that's the, how the kids say it, right? But it's going well. It's been a lot of fun. I've been working really hard. TV is always, I got a random email one time. I think my friend connected us, but this TLC producer reached out to me. They worked for a production company called Betty, like based out of the UK. And then they TLC paid them to produce the show called My Little Life. And they reached out and they interviewed me. And so I kind of got my TV debut, if you will. I mean, reality shows don't put people in the best light, you know, no. But it was still, you know, it was a cool experience. It was, you know, you said no publicity is bad publicity, and this was just publicity. So anyway, so that's been going well. But recently, I've been booking a lot of short films. I've been booking, you know, extra work and as well on feature films, and just moving up the chain, you know, just building, like I said, stacking that resume, you know, and working on anything, shaking hands with people, working on stuff. So a lot of potential stuff too. There's a couple big things that I'm trying to get my foot in the door for, get noticed for. And so if that kicks off, then it's like, then it's really a career at that point, you know. But at this point, it's just building that resume so people take me serious.
Yeah, 100%, man. Like, I think you've got to do the groundwork. You've got to do the legwork now. And you never know where that might actually take you in the future. Like we were talking about a little bit before. You know, I think that I saw you, and this is where I reached out to you, actually. The Garcia brothers. So those, you know them, right? You were part of their, yeah. So they're actually, well, it's a funny story. I don't actually know them in person, but I've been following them for ages. Like, they had a movie called The Lighthouse, and I watched that movie and I absolutely loved it. Like, I was astounded at the storytelling and the way they made the actual movie. And Drew and Nate, I figured out that they were actually brothers, because I didn't know that at the time. And I just started, you know, following what they were doing over the years. And then they made that short, Hero. And then I was like, okay, these guys are actually going somewhere. Like, I can see them heading towards Hollywood. Like, they're going to make it for sure. And then they made like a mini feature of Hero, like a longer version of Hero. And that was just incredible. Like, blew me away how they made it. And then they made that Christmas commercial with you in it. And that's when I sort of like, I was looking at, you know, your profile, what you were doing. And I was very curious to know your story, your background. And that's sort of where it began, man. But I had seen you in like Devin Supertramp's videos, but didn't really know who you were, so to speak. So it's a very, very small world, man. Like, with the internet and Instagram, it enables you to like connect with so many different people, which has been absolutely amazing for my podcast. So now, I also saw you the other day in a Gymshark video. So how did that start, man?
Well, it's by a beautiful thing called serendipity that seems to be the theme of things, right? So I was at home one day, and I woke up with intense vertigo, and later on I found it to be Meniere's disease. What Meniere's disease, right, like, is it causes, you get vertigo, but then it causes like hard of hearing in like one ear. Like, you become hard of hearing in one ear, and so I became pretty deaf in my left ear, and you know, and but I at the time I didn't know what was going on. And so I called my dad. He drove down from a place called St. George, Utah, And he said, hey, I'm going to come pick you up. And I said, okay. He comes, he picks me up, and he takes me to the hospital, and then we drive to St. George to recover. Well, we drive to St. George's recover, and I was kind of at the time, you know, kind of dabbling in it. And I was kind of interested. And I just on this guy named Steve Cook, who is, a Gymshark athlete. So I was like, cool, I want to I'm a fan. I just read this article on him. And I was like, cool, like, no, you know, no big deal, not thinking about it. And so then I remembered I was in St. George, and I remember he has this gym called Fitness Culture, which is a gym, I believe, that Gymshark helped him build, and it's his business, you know, it's his gym, and things like that. And so I woke up when we were in St. George, like, Dad, I'm feeling a lot better. I'd love to go to, I know of this gym called Fitness Culture that I believe Steve Cook owns, and I would love to go, you know, work out there just to check it out, just for, you know. And I didn't think he was going to be there by any means, but like, it was still fun to go. And so I remember walking into the gym, and I walk in, and lo and behold, he's sitting like on a couch. Oh. And I was just like so starstruck, like in that moment, like as I just read an article, knew who he was, like, and I was like, and I like walk up to the front desk lady, and I was like, is that Steve Cook? And she's like, yeah, yeah, it is. And I was like, oh, that's cool. you know, like, obviously I knew who he was. And so I buy the day pass. Like, yeah, can I get a day pass? She's like, yeah, I don't care. I want to get it. And so I'm like holding my breath, you know, I'm like, you know, not trying to be weird, but it's funny when you're trying not to be weird. Like, that's when you're the weirdest.
Yeah.
You know, so I was like walking in, and I walk past him just for him to notice me, and he kind of looks over like, and he kind of knew that I noticed. Hey, how's it going? I'm like, I'm good. I mean, I'm good. I'm like, but, no, and I wasn't that weird, I promise. That was just that was just for entertainment value.
Okay. Yeah. Exaggerate the story, good one.
Thank you. I walked up, he shook my hand, and I said, I'm Steve Cook. And I was like, oh, hi, I'm Lee Liston. And we ended up talking for like 30 minutes. And, wow. And we chatted, and I told him I read the article. And I got really deep. I was kind of like the way you and I chat. I was asking, is it very hard, like, being in the fitness industry? Do you ever feel like people base your success in fitness about if your aesthetic is a certain way? Or do you wish it was more on the knowledge that you know, and how do you compare the two? Because you can't always say, you know, we just got this really deep talk, and he was like, it was almost, I mean, he could speak to this if he wanted, but I almost feel like it was therapeutic for him, you know, to have this real refreshing conversation, not just like, hey, I'm obsessed with you, you signed my shirt kind of deal. And so we were sitting there chatting, and he goes, hey, let me tell you what. And I was like, okay. He's like, I want to take a picture with you. I want to throw it on my Instagram story, and then I want to tag you, and then I'm going to follow you. I was like, okay, whoa, that was cool. You know? And so he takes a picture with him and I, he throws it on his story, tags me, and says, what an enlightened dude. I'll never forget that. I was like, well, I'm enlightened.
Wow, man.
And so he says that, and he follows me and everything, what he says he's going to do. And then a few months later, I'm not even thinking, you know, I'd kind of forgotten about it. I had, of course, posted the picture, you know, of me and him since, and talked about it, kind of, you know, low-key brag, but you kind of make it look like you were, I'm just kidding, but you know, and, but I had posted the picture of him and I, and then Gymshark, I guess, saw that, and they happened to be doing a campaign called the Way to the World campaign. So they sent me a message, and I was like, oh, this is him. This isn't real. There's no way this is real. Saying like, hey, we'd love you to participate in our Way to the World campaign. Like, film. I was like, whoa. And so I messaged them back, not really believing it. And then it was all real. And I was like, holy crap. Oh. So they paid my way to come down to St. George, which is a 5-hour drive where I live now. And so I drove. They paid for my gas. They put me up at a hotel for a night, you know, so I could go film. You know, I don't know if I should be telling everybody, like, wow, I should try to get in a Gymshark video. But anyway, they put me up, and we went and filmed, and then we filmed that video that we saw today. And And I'm not going to lie, like, once again, just being completely honest, they brought up the camera and they're like, hey, we're going to film. Now, one of the regret, okay, one thing, just a little side note, I hate, the one of the things I hate about that period of time, so I worked for a place called Evermore Park at the time, which is the theatrical experience park that you've probably seen, like, on Instagram, and I had to grow out that beard, and I hated that. But in the costume, the beard was fine, but when I wasn't in the costume, I looked like I was homeless. Like, you know, like I was like, hey, Lee, you doing good? You okay? Is all right at home? You know, like, you know, but really, that's what I was doing. And so I got a trim, luckily. I got a trim up for that video. And so I got my, like, hair trimmed and my beard trimmed, you know, and I went there and I filmed that video. And I remember they filmed, they're like, hey, I'm going to ask you a question and then answer it. And they filmed it. And then I gave my answer, you know, in the video, and they were like, holy crap. I was like, what? They're like, that was the best that we've, like, gotten out of this whole thing with everybody we filmed with, like, conversational-wise. And I'm like, oh, thank you. And it was just, like, a pretty cool experience.
Wow, man. That's awesome. Because I know the video kind of went viral. So, like, that's me, and for an actor, like, wanting to get noticed and, you know, book gigs and things like that, that's sort of how you've got to do it these days as well. You know, you got to hook up with the right kinds of people, and then when you start going viral, you never know who's actually going to watch it and reach out to you. That's great, man. Do you still connect with Steve Cook nowadays?
Not too much. I mean, because once again, he's not. I tried to get him into acting a couple times. Like, I knew he did the movie with Callum von Moger, who that you know what I'm talking about. It wasn't like a big film, but it was like
I don't think I've seen that one. No.
Well, it wasn't big. It was like a bodybuilding movie. Let me think of it. I'm gonna think of it. Let's see if it comes up. It was called Bigger. So that's what it was. It's about. He played, Callum von Moger played a young Arnold Schwarzenegger.
That was him. Yes, I have seen it. Yeah.
Yeah, so it was Callum von Moger who played him. And then Steve Cook had a small part in it. And that was kind of his, you know, the extent of his acting career. And I was like, dude, you're a good looking guy. You should be an actor. Like, you have a good voice. You're good on camera. Like, get some acting chops on you. Dude, you're unstoppable. And It's just not something he's interested in, and on my end, I wasn't interested in my aesthetic as much as I was is my acting career, right? Like, I tried to do bodybuilding, and I looked at it, and I did all the things, but I was like, this isn't what I want to do. You know, I'm good at it, and it was frustrating to people because I'm like, I have these natural genetics that I've never taken a steroid in my life. You know, Scouts on or whatever you want to say, and I've never taken a steroid, and yet I had these great genetics that could do well in bodybuilding, and I stepped away from that. And I think me stepping away from fitness super intense, and because I had messaged a couple times like, hey, I want to work out together. He's like, yeah, come down to, you know, Fitness Culture and we'll work out. And I had never been able to make it down, and now to this point, you know, it's been a couple years since I filmed that video, and I think, wow, it's been that long. It's been a, you know, a little bit, and we've just kind of grown apart as friends. I mean, he still likes my posts, and I like his, you know, but we're not like uber best friends, you know. I would say we're like acquaintances, you know, so yeah.
That's still fine, man. At least you've got that connection still there. And you never know, like, later on in the future, you never know what can happen. So
right.
That's good, man. So you're not really like a bodybuilder today, so to speak, or do you still like exercise and keep up your fitness routine?
Not as much. Like the biggest fitness thing I do is I still weigh my food and like I count, you know, my macros, my protein, fats and carbs. And I use some of the tools of bodybuilders so to speak, just to maintain. And then that way, when I decide to start lifting again, when I do lift, it like just comes back, you know, pretty quick. So I don't like I just maintain. So I got a role in a commercial. It's gonna be like a fun cheesy commercial. It's for this company called Chamber Media, and I've done a couple commercials with them. Well, actually, one commercial with them. But just so they don't come back and like, wait a minute, we've only done one with you. You liar. but they booked me for they want me to be a luchador like in this commercial. And so I told my buddy Barrett, who was kind of like my agent slash director buddy slash the person who got me into acting. I was like, I should do like a 40-day cut and just get shredded, you know, for that, you know, just for the sake of that, but not for a bodybuilding competition. So I don't know. I'm not, fitness isn't my career anymore, but I still know how to do it. You know, you don't forget how to do it.
No, it's like second nature almost for some people. Yeah. So that's awesome, man. So like, what drives you as a person? Like, what gets you up in the morning to keep doing what you're doing? Because it is a tough gig that you are making in your life.
Momentum, keeping up momentum. Because like I said, I've booked a few roles. Like, I even look at, I mean, to be honest with you, just to be straight up, I even put things like this, like our podcast interview that we're doing right now, on my resume, so people can go back and, because it's another form of media, right, where people can get to know me authentically, and I think it's very valuable, and that's why I get excited about these kind of things. And so
that's mad, what drives me,
well, it's great though, you know, because it's because this is so fun, and it's a form of entertainment if you think about it. You know, we're entertaining people, and then being honest, and we're not acting, we're not playing a character, but we are entertaining people. So, I mean, yeah, I'm an actor, but I don't want to limit it to just that. And so, what gets me up in the morning, like, I build up this momentum. Like, I had this today, and then I'm hanging out with my buddy, Billy Mann. He's known as Man Billy on TikTok. We've been friends for years, and he has 2 million followers on TikTok. You know, we're good buddies, but, like, that's not why we're in. We're just close friends. And then my other buddy, Barrett, I'm filming. I have 4 auditions to film tonight that I have to do because they're scenes, they're not monologues, so I'm gonna film, have my buddy read off of them. So I have, once you gain momentum, it's like you're stoking a fire. You know, you don't just let the fire go out, you blow on the fire, you put wood on the fire, you do whatever to keep the fire going. So it's like, while the fire is going, I want to keep that fire going, you know.
That's great, man. And I never actually thought of this as a way to put on a resume. Like, that's new for me, so I just learned something. How about that? So that's awesome, man. Like, hopefully, like, this can, you know, get you somewhere. Like, I really believe that people's stories are powerful and they have the ability to change lives. So if, you know, and I don't cut anything out. So that's the important thing. It's not like media. It's not like I'm editing bits in, bits out, you know, making it sound a certain way. It's raw. It's organic. It's how we are in the moment, but it's still entertaining people, like you said, through stories. So it's real. Like, that's the most powerful form, I feel. Yeah, so that's incredible, man. So do you have any mentors in your life?
Mentors, as far as that, like, I would definitely say Barrett Bergen is one of my mentors. Like, I am up every morning. He's like, did you submit for this? Did you do this? How's your acting going? You know, and he's always pushing me to be a better actor, but like, he's also a very active member of the church. So he knows a lot of church doctrine and things like that, that I talked to him about. I think my dad is definitely a mentor in my life. I call almost every day. And because one of the things I never want to do is get so consumed in a career that I forget my relationship with my family and good friends, you know, easy to do that when you get so busy. You kind of forget about people, and then before you know it, you kind of lose the chance. And so even when it's a little stressful, I push. So my dad would definitely be a mentor in my life that I talk to. Yeah.
That's good, man. And where do you think, like, the followership on your Instagram came from? Was that through all the videos that you did with Supertramp, with Gymshark, with some of your commercials? Where do you think that came from? Because I'm always curious to know, like, what promotes or what builds a good social media presence so that people can actually see you and, you know, follow your life, so to speak.
Yeah, well, that is my Achilles heel, my friend. I am an old school person. I did not, this was organically built, but not to my own doing. So what I mean is, when I got some followers from the Devin Supertramp video, some followers from, but I got 20,000 followers in one night. Because I had 24.5 at peak, if you will, and I've kind of lost followers because they're like, "Oh, you're not doing fitness? I'm disappointed. I'm leaving." it's true though. People are like, "Well, it's funny because you get famous in fitness, and they're like, "Hey, how much can you bench? How much can you bench? What's your squat? What's your body fat right now? What are you doing? Are you eating? What are you doing like right now?" And people are like so, like, want to know everything. And it's funny with fitness. And then I was just kind of like, "Hey guys, I'm an actor." And a guy made a post like, I'll make like an actor post, and it'll get like half the likes or engagement than my, like. And then I throw up a picture of me like flexing or something, and people are like, "Yeah, I like this. I love this." You know, like, they get like so into it, and I'm like, one day, you know. And so, I mean, I'm not gonna hate it or not be great, but it's just the facts. And so, I got that Gymshark video came out. I remember I was talking to an ex-girlfriend, little plug there, but we had just broken up, and I text her, and I go, "Oh yeah, that Gymshark video is coming out tomorrow." And I was like, you know, because I've been in stuff, so I was like, "Huh, cool." And she's like, "Oh, awesome." And then I woke up the next day, and the video came out. Huh. I'm at 6,000 followers, 7,000. Oh, 10,000. Oh, 12,000. Oh, 15. Oh, whoa, 20,000. Whoa, 23. And then 24.5, you know, 24,500 followers. Whoa. You know, and it just exploded. Like, it was literally overnight. Like, literally. Like, wow. And I was just like, so, yeah, I'm not a social media star by any, like, I mean, I have the personality for it, but I don't want to tell you, like, this is how you do it. But my biggest advice, though, for the way that it happened to me, just put yourself out there. Be involved. Shake hands with people. Don't be so quick to go from point A to point B that you don't stop and smell the roses, because you don't know who you can shake hands with and what opportunity come of that. You know, what if, you know, because you just never know, you know? And so that's kind of the way I look at it. Eventually, I'll get a social media manager and people like that to kind of help me build that again and kind of gain that momentum on social media. But other than that, just be you is the thing. And that's so cliche, but it's so true, because that's what people got behind me for. They got excited, was because I was being myself. You know, I wasn't. They loved that, and they related with. And I think people relate to this podcast. Going to go, and it can feel hard because fitness is a saturated industry, right? And sometimes podcasts can feel like a saturated, but you never know what's gonna, you know, work and jump and explode. You just don't, you know.
Yeah, exactly, man. Like, that's really, really good advice. You know, like, when I started this podcast back in October, I honestly was not going to do it unless I myself was committed, because I knew that it was going to be a long slog, and I knew that it was going to be very, very hard in some respects to actually build something that people can resonate with, people can actually start following, people can get something from it. The main mission will remain the same, and that is to inspire, to motivate, to educate, and to challenge people through stories, and to reach as many people as we possibly can. And it's through people like yourself that are willing to come on, willing to share their story, that makes the story box, you know, because I couldn't do it without you. I couldn't do it without anyone else wanting to come on and, you know, be themselves and to share their story. So thank you so much, Lee, for your time, for coming on, for your advice, your actual story, which has inspired and is really encouraging to me, man. Like, really appreciate it. So I got a couple more questions before we finish up, because I am mindful of your time. Three bits of advice that you could give someone that is starting out and or needing a little bit of a boost in their life currently.
About like acting or like to what specifically, or
can be life advice or life, could be towards acting, could be really pretty much anything, man. Anything three bits of advice that you could just give to someone that if you were to meet tomorrow or today and they just, you felt like they needed help, you felt like they needed advice, and you just say to them, look, here's three things that I can give you right now that hopefully might help you.
Well, number one, we all have an itch, right? We all have an itch for what we want to do. At one point or another, you had an itch to do a podcast. I had an itch to be an actor. And I scratched that itch, you know, and that kind of led to finding what made me happy, you know, in a lot of ways. The next thing I would say, have fun, but also run your life like a business. It wasn't until a month ago that I started taking the business aspect of what I'm doing, because I was dabbling in acting. It was just coming to me, like, and it was something naturally drawn to, but I wasn't taking it too serious in the business sense. So I made a spreadsheet and I got my resume and I got all my submissions organized and I have everything, you know, organized and everything's on my resume and everything's valued. If it's not something that's building my career, you know, in a lot of ways, then what am I doing? And then the third one is be nice to yourself. I think we don't like who we are because we project ourselves and we look at like someone like Ryan Reynolds and like, oh, I want to be Ryan Reynolds. Like, and you're not Ryan Reynolds. I'm Lee Liston. And I'm not Dwayne The Rock Johnson. I'm Lee Liston. And that is enough. So be kind to yourself. Be kind to your career. Work on your resume and build it. And just build on it every day, because everybody, you, me, Dwayne Johnson, whoever it is, has had to build the resume at some point.
That's right, man. That's, yeah. Really good pieces of advice. Now, your favorite film. I love this part. Favorite film, favorite actor, and the last movie that you watched.
Oh, okay. Favorite film of all time is Big Fish. Ooh. I love Big Fish. Have you ever seen it? If I can just ask you real quick.
I don't think I have, no.
Okay, that's your homework. Go watch it.
Okay.
And then my favorite actor, I love Dwayne Johnson because he's just like the titan of the industry.
Mm-hmm.
But if I had to say favorite actor, it would have to be Ewan McGregor. He's the star of Big Fish, you know, big surprise. But he's the star of Big Fish, very talented actor, very real and authentic. So Ewan McGregor, for sure. And last movie I watched was Whiplash, that with Miles Teller and J.K. Simmons.
I love Whiplash.
I had never seen it.
Dude, oh, it's so good, right?
Well, yeah, because my friend Barrett Bergen, that I think I mentioned him like 80 times. He's like, Lee, why do you talk about it? I'm like, because you made the career what it is. But, you know, he loves it. But whenever we're messaging each other now, like, I'm like, I have like four auditions on my grinding. He's like, dude, don't burn out. And then I messaged that part where J.K. Simmons, you know, wraps his hand around and, like, not my tempo. And he's like, nope. And I'm like, it's like, so I think of my acting career like that now, where I'm like, not my tempo. I'm like, okay, gotta go harder. And his hand's bleeding, right? So he sticks it in that the ice water just to, like, cool it off. And then he, like, wraps his hand. And then he gets in the car accident. And he still runs. He's, like, bleeding and, like, running like a psycho. But he wants to be in the jazz band so bad. You know, so I just... Yeah, so, yeah, that is the last film that had nothing to do with the last question you asked, but yes, that is the last film I watched.
No, I love it, man, love it. Like, I got to watch Big Fish now. I love asking this question because it means that some people might come up with a movie that I haven't actually seen, which has been the case for several people that I've had on, and I'm thinking, what's that movie? Like, I'm missing out on this movie, like, why? And I've had to go back and actually watch the movie they've recommended. So yeah, it's fun. So my last question is, what's next for you?
What is next for me? Well, just building that resume. I have a couple short films coming up and auditions. Big things I'm trying to get on is Willow with Disney Plus. I'd love to get on Willow. Now, I never ever thought in a million years I would say this, but they just announced that Taika Waititi is directing a Willy Wonka.
Yes, I saw that. Short. Yes.
So I made a joke. I was like, I want to play Willy Wonka. I told my dad, I played Willy Wonka, and then all the components were average size.
Yes.
And so I was like, and then the other thing that I talked about was, if you read that article, they're actually doing like a origin story of the Oompa Loompas, like a narrative about them. It's not like they're like sitting in the chocolate factory. And so me and my buddy are talking about, you know, getting some connections so I could get on that show, you know, potentially, because how cool would it be to tell a really cool narrative about an Oompa Loompa, given I never wanted to be one, but I mean, I was like, but like for this, maybe, I don't know.
Dude, that'd be something I'd get on board with 100%. So make sure that you make it happen.
I will. Definitely. I gotta hustle.
Get it, man. Get it 100%, and I'll plug it like there's no tomorrow. Because that was like one of the films that I grew up with, Willy Wonka. And the Oompa Loompas, like, I used to keep singing the song all the time. It gets stuck in your head. It's like one of those things.
Yeah.
But I would love to see a different version where the Oompa Loompa is Willy Wonka. That'd be so good. So good. Well,
wouldn't it be crazy though? And like, or no, even crazier. What if I was human, like Willy Wonka was human, and the average size people were Oompa Loompas? You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You completely flip, like a Twilight Zone kind of thing where you're flipping it around, like, you know, like completely flipping the script, literally.
Would it actually have the same message and the same storyline, but you just flip the heights of everybody involved?
Yeah, fun fact for you, little piece of trivia. If Johnny Depp had said no to Willy Wonka, do you know who the runner-up was to play Willy Wonka?
No idea.
Dwayne The Rock Johnson. Fun fact, I read that. Like, in a trivia, I'm like, that's so random.
I don't actually see Dwayne The Rock Johnson as being Willy Wonka, but obviously Hollywood thought that he could be.
Right.
That's fascinating.
So, but regardless, though, I definitely want to get my career big enough where I can. I was talking to my friend about it last night, and it's like, I would love to be able to make a phone call where that becomes realistic, you know, where that's like, hey, I can put butts in seats, you know? Yeah, so.
So, well, you got my butt, man. Whenever a movie comes out, let me know and I'll watch it. So
sounds good, dude. Well, thank you for having me. By the way, this has been so fun. You are such a good interviewer.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it. You're such a good guest. Like, you make it easy for me. I love your story, man. Love your advice. Thank you so much for coming on. And you got another raging fan here, all the way in Sydney, Australia. So thanks again, man. Really, really appreciate it.
No problem. Take care, my friend.
You too, dude. Cheers.
Thank you all for listening to this week's episode of the Storybox Podcast. I really hope you enjoyed it. If you'd like to hear more episodes like this one, you can do so now over on Apple Podcasts or Spotify just by searching up the Storybox. And if you got something out of this week's episode, please leave a rating and review over on Apple Podcasts and share it around with your friends and family. Let's start changing people's lives through powerful stories. You can also connect with the Storybox on social media for updates or to send a nice message via Instagram and Facebook just by searching up the Storybox. It's that easy. Until we dive next week back into the Storybox, I'm Jay Phantom, and don't forget to share your story around. I'll catch you then.